You've heard me talk about my friends at Kel-Tec for years, and it's because I really believe in them as a company and as innovators. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond, like with the Kel-Tec P50, a revolutionary award-winning pistol that packs a punch in a compact package. The Kel-Tec P50 is perfect for home defense, for range shooting, or just even having some fun. And with its top-mounted Picatinny rail, you can easily attach your favorite optics or accessories to make it truly yours. Whether you are a seasoned shooter or you're just starting out, the Kel-Tec P50 is the perfect pistol for anyone looking for power and precision in a compact and easy-to-use package. Their firearms in design and function go above and beyond. Learn more about the P50 pistol at KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
But look, this is a predictable, sad ending to an investigation that never should have taken place. Shortly after he was announced in 2019, he went on the record, you know, as a prosecutor, making a rare public statement that he disagreed with IG Horowitz's conclusion that the investigation was appropriately launched. And then he spent the next 3 to 4 years with a cognitive bias trying to build a case that somehow it was. And we see the results today. And the results are clearly that he didn't come up with anything. And I think, you know, what I make of it at the end of the day, Joy, I look at his record of 2 failed prosecutions and 1 plea that Michael Horowitz presented to him on a platter. And then I compare that to the record of Special Counsel Mueller, who convicted Paul Manafort and Rick Gates and Mike Flynn, George Papadopoulos.
Really, you're going to bring up Mike Flynn? You're going to bring him up, the guy who didn't actually lie. He was someone who simply said that he couldn't remember meeting a certain individual, and they said, oh, you're a liar, and they threw him in jail. That's Peter Strzok, by the way, who's really trying very, very hard to deny what actually happened and the results of this Durham investigation, which I wrote about. If you get the newsletter, you got the early analysis of this, which is why it's important to see. You got it before cable news started dissecting it. So that's why you need to make sure you sign up for that. So welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you to start off the top of this third hour. We got a busy show for you today because of what we got. Two developments. We have a development in the Biden case. We also have, obviously, this Durham report, the full report that is out, and we're going to talk about what that means. I was reading it last night. I had pulled up a few key, just a few key takeaways for you. So we're going to have all of that as well. And then we have an in-studio guest, which is first time we've ever, well, at least with our new setup that we've had that. So we'll get into all of that. So you can listen to the show. Obviously, you can listen to it in a station market near you. You can stream the program, and you can also watch the simulcast, YouTube, Facebook, or 347 on channel on DirecTV. Yeah, channel 347 DirecTV. So this story is damning. I was reading it. Like I said, I sent out the newsletter last night. It makes it official that Democrats colluded with the FBI to manufacture this Trump-Russia collusion narrative. And we were getting, you know, bit by bit, some of, you know, what kind of what they had been looking at. I mean, just, you know, really how ultimately ridiculous it all was. I mean, there, I've seen some people say that this, oh, well, they knew all along. Well, that's not the point. The point wasn't to confirm what you knew. The point was to get it all out there, receipts all, bones, everything, drag it all out from the closet. And that's ultimately what, I mean, that's what we got. I mean, this was wild. I mean, every single damn person lied. And the FBI, this is how they came out with it. They said, oh my gosh, like, our bad. We made some missteps because we call interfering in an election missteps. You know what, Kane? I just think if I just don't feel like paying my taxes, those are some missteps.
Yeah, just a misstep.
If I run a red light and I just don't feel like stopping, I just, you know, some missteps.
Or a misstep. Right.
Yeah, you know, the FBI released a statement saying, quote, get a load of this. The conduct in 2016 and 2017 that Special Counsel Durham examined was the reason the current FBI leadership already implemented dozens of corrective actions, which have now been in place for some time. Had those reforms been in place in 2016, the missteps identified in the report, could have been prevented. The report reinforces the importance of ensuring the FBI continues to do its work with the rigor, objectivity, and professionalism that the American people deserve and rightly expect, end quote. You know, like watching parents at town halls. That's, see, because of all this other stuff that's come out, that's why I don't believe in any of this. What we're just going to call outright election interference, missteps. Teehee, our bad. We didn't mean to lie to a FISA judge. Teehee, such a misstep. Missteps. I mean, the DNC submitted all of this information to a FISA court and they lied. Well, wait, let me take that back. You had the DOJ and they lied about where they got it from, Fusion GPS. And Fusion GPS lied about where they got the money from, Perkins Coie. And Perkins Coie was hiding the fact that they were getting it from Hillary Clinton. Like, for instance, this is some of the takeaways. So page 92, because I read it last night, the DNC and Fusion GPS, remember, they colluded with the press. We've said this a million times. So what they would do is you would have this disgraced spy, Chris Steele, who had all of this stupid oppo material, and they were leaking it. So he was working with the FBI and Fusion GPS, and Fusion GPS was leaking it, sending it to these reporters saying, psst, got a hot tip for you. And the reporters would, look, is it about my Trump? And they immediately ate it up. And so they would take this oppo, write stories about it. And then the DOJ would say, wow, look at these stories with which we had nothing to do. Because remember, Nellie Oher was at Fusion GPS. Her husband, Bruce Oher, that was the gateway over at the DOJ. And so they would send some of this over to them and say, this, you know, the story's going to come out, etc. Or if the stories came out, make sure they were aware of it. And then the DOJ would compile it. Wow, look at all of these stories about this information that we had no idea about that totally did not come from Hillary Clinton, the Clinton campaign and the DNC. And so they took those stories and they literally used it as evidence to a FISA court. Not only that, but and I'm going to get to the reporters in a minute. I think this was on page 101 and 102, counterintel agents for Crossfire Hurricane, which was the op that they were calling the Russian investigation. They were actually skeptical of the information that was being used to justify the FISA applications for Carter Page. And they had no idea that the reporting that they were being given or that they were coming across, they had no clue that it was actually from the, lost train of thought. They had no idea that it was actually coming from, you know, the DNC, etc. They had no clue that it was discredited material furnished by the DNC. And you can see that from their conversations on page 101, 102 of the PDF of the Durham report, which I linked on chapter and verse. So the reporters that had all of this stuff, they said, so they were naming some of them. Some of them we knew. And they were getting into it like some of the reporters were Peter Fritsch. He was a Fusion GPS. He mailed Stephen Levine. He was a Washington correspondent for Quartz. And he was like, wow, have you ever come across this Cat Carter Page? Wow, look at this Carter Page guy. Wow. And just like would suggest stuff like this. This is crazy. Absolutely crazy. And this is what they were doing. All of these reporters, they were taking all of this information and doing all of this stuff. And then the stories that they were writing, like Michael Isikoff was one. He was named. I'm pulling up the PDF again. Michael Isikoff was named. There were a number. Some of these stories you probably even came across. I mean, I'm positive you guys did. Some of these stories, I'm absolutely positive you came across some of them. And so you have, I'm looking at some of this. This is one of them. They had, they were trying to talk to a lot of people. Glenn Simpson emailed Jane Meyer of the New Yorker magazine with the subject line Carter Page. And he was like, wow, you should be interested in this Carter Page guy. And then Mayer responded to Simpson saying, yeah, I'm interested in setting up an off-record meeting to discuss these stories and learn more about your research. Also, the Jake Berkowitz, an employee at Fusion GPS, emailing Tom Hamburger ASAP at the Washington Post, sent him the Carter Page clear information. Oh my gosh, all kinds of reporters, all of these reporters. It's amazing. You know, the quote unquote free press, guys. The free press, wouldn't you know? Speaking of the free press, did they have Andy McCabe on CNN last night? Does anybody know? Did they? Well, no, did he have a hit last night? Because I was wondering, it was like 3 and 4 hours. Oh my gosh, because he was so involved in this. We're going to get to that. It just made me think of it. You know, I was just thinking, wow, it is unbelievable. And these reporters, what really just blows the mind about this, you had the Democrat Party that colluded with the FBI to overthrow the will of the voters and undermine a free and fair election. There is not a single damn thing, including their in the recent time, including all their claims about January 6th, that comes anywhere close to this crisis of a catastrophe. Nothing. You had all of these willing press people, willing participants, spreading propaganda, and they allowed their political zealotry to suffocate their investigative instincts. A natural curiosity. And that's really what it comes down to. I mean, the press in this is unlike anything I've ever seen. They didn't ask questions about a single thing. Page 95, Democrats build their meetings to discuss pushing the propaganda in ways like, oh, communications with Mark Elias regarding the server issue. You know, Kane, the server issue. Yeah, the server issue. Oh, my gosh. They wanted to hide it because they knew that what they were doing was wrong. They knew it. It also showed, page 135, the FBI paid Igor Tichenko over $200,000. Even after they discovered that he was lying to them, they upped it and paid him $300,000. I mean, this is wild. I have more on these revelations that we're going to get into, but this is the Democrats' part, the Democrat Party's, their pig screwer strategy. I was telling you about LBJ, right? That was what this was about. It was this strategy that they had to try to just make the accusation. And we're going to get into more of it. We have headlines on the way. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College. Developing minds, changing hearts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So first up, a Soros-backed prosecutor. Now, do you remember the story that came yesterday, the guy who was attacked with a bat? So the guy who attacked him, this 49-year-old man, he assaulted two congressional staffers with a metal bat. He was previously charged with assaulting a police officer, but a local Soros-backed prosecutor declined to pursue the charges, according to court records. Fairfax County Commonwealth's attorney Steve Descano, his campaign was backed and supported by George Soros, declined to prosecute the man, Juan Pham, in 2022 when he assaulted a police officer. That's according to court records. He attacked two staffers at a Democrat Virginia at the Democratic Virginia HQ of Representative Jerry Connolly. It was his district office. He hit him with a bat Monday morning. So he's been charged with aggravated malicious wounding and malicious wounding. He's being held without bond, according to ABC 7. But see, it came back to bite them. That's unbelievable. Well, not really, because, you know, they supported that. A Colorado man tries to trade places with his dog to avoid a DUI arrest. Don't try this. This is Associated Press in Springfield, Colorado. A driver was pulled over for speeding, and he tried to switch places with his dog so he wouldn't get arrested. The officer literally watched him maneuver inside the car and switch places with his dog in a town of about 1,300 people in Eastern Plains. The man said, "It was not me." And the police said that he showed signs clearly of being drunk. And then when the officer asked him how much to drink, he got out of the car and ran away from the officer. And they promptly caught him within about 20 yards. So he was taken to the hospital. He was arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence. But where's the dog, though? Like, I want to know where the dog is. The dog was like, probably like, "I'm so glad you saved me from this dude. Like, help me." I mean, gosh. This is kind of wild. Burglars beware. Scientists have found a way to collect human DNA from literally almost anywhere, including the water and air. Scientists say that DNA can be detected from the air, even a footprint on the beach. And they said this could be vital for when murderers refuse to say where they bury their victims. Wow. I mean, we're getting close to nothing being unsolvable anymore. China has sentenced a 78-year-old U.S. citizen to life in prison on spying charges. Details of the charges against John Xinguan Lung, who also holds permanent residency in Hong Kong, have not been publicly released. He probably blinked at, you know, Xi Jinping's general direction incorrectly or something. So he's sentenced to life in prison on spying. What a weird charge. We have a lot more underway. The Durham Report and a list of people you should never trust again. Stay with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Regardless, the report is now here. It has dropped, and it might not have produced everything of what some Republicans hoped for. It is regardless devastating to the FBI, and to a degree, it does exonerate Donald Trump.
To a degree. I mean, it's completely, totally pig fecal matter. To a degree. I mean, it's a partial turd, you know, a degree of one. They've got to clarify it. I mean, oh, but wait a minute before you guys. I mean, to a degree. No, it's like all the degrees. Yep. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. I mean, they lied to you. They lied to you. They lied to you. They lied to you. I've got a lot more audio here. I mean, there's just so much. Can I just play audio soundbite 4? Do you remember when Barack Obama promised? He said, "No, I can guarantee you there's been absolutely no election meddling. There's been no influence in any investigation at all. None at all." This was towards the end of his presidential term when there were already suspicions that people were trying to get involved with this. Audio soundbite 4. Listen to this.
Ability to carry out her duties.
Mr. President, when you say what you've just said, when Josh Earnest said, as he did your spokesman in January, the information from the Justice Department is she's not a target. Some people, I think, are worried whether or not the decision, whether or not how to handle the case will be made on political grounds, not legal grounds. Can you guarantee to the American people, can you direct the Justice Department to say Hillary Clinton will be treated as the evidence goes, she will not be in any way protected?
I can guarantee that. And no. I can guarantee that not because I give Attorney General Lynch a directive. That is institutionally how we have always operated. I do not
institutionally
talk to the Attorney General about pending investigations. I do not talk to FBI directors about pending investigations.
He looks too smug.
We have a strict line and always have maintained it, previous
so,
presidents.
Just to button this up.
I guarantee it.
He's getting mad at me.
I guarantee that there is no political influence in any investigation conducted by the Justice Department or the FBI, not just in this case, but in any case.
And any.
Period.
And she will be treated no differently.
Guaranteed. Full stop. Nobody gets treated differently when it comes to the Justice Department because nobody is above the law.
Nobody does. Nobody does, he says.
That aged like milk.
It did. It aged like milk. It aged like Madonna. Oh, sorry, wait.
Oh, that's harsh.
I didn't mean to say. Shh, brain, be quiet. I don't believe him. I didn't believe him then, and I have all the evidence in the world to continue not. Because as we've seen, that wasn't the case. I mean, I'm just reading what page is this? 95. Let me just read you a little teensy paragraph from the Durham Report, okay? A little teeny little bit. Quote, the general counsel at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., Sussman provided Baker, now remember these are James Baker, Michael Sussman, with the purported data and white papers that allegedly demonstrated a covert communications channel between the Trump Organization and a Russia-based bank, Alpha Bank. You guys, now, sidebar, you guys remember all of this, right? Do you remember the New York Times breathlessly screeching about Alpha Bank? Right. This is this whole story. So back to the PDF. Quote, Sussman's billing records reflect that he was regularly billing the Clinton campaign for his work on the Alpha Bank allegations. Importantly, on July 29th, 2016, 3 days after the purported approval of the Clinton plan intelligence, Michael Sussman and Mark Elias, the general counsel to the Clinton campaign, met with Fusion GPS personnel in Elias's office at Perkins Coie. Sussman billed his time in this meeting to the Clinton campaign under the category general political advice. Thereafter, on July 31st, 2016, Sussman billed the Clinton campaign for 24 minutes with the billing description, quote, communications with Mark Elias regarding server issue, end quote. In compiling and disseminating the Alpha Bank allegations, Sussman consistently met and communicated with Elias. They were working on this Alpha Bank story. And it gets into how they were pushing the New York Times to publish this article titled Investigating Donald Trump, FBI Sees No Clear Link to Russia. They were trying to, this was the same day that it published, they were trying to push them to run a counter story. This secret channel between the Trump Organization and Alpha Bank. So they were trying to say, wait a minute, you ran your story prematurely. Wait, here's this, look. And the article alleged that the FBI spent all this time examining computer data showing an odd stream of activity to a Trump Organization server. And the New York Times conveniently had been provided computer logs that evidenced this alleged activity. But they said that the article noted that the FBI actually never found really any kind of conclusive or direct link, but they ran with it anyway. And on the same date, Slate published an article titled, quote, was a Trump server communicating with Russia? And it literally had all of the allegations that Sussman had secretly provided to the FBI. Oh, my gosh. And then you had David Korn over at Mother Jones. And then they referenced the Slate piece on Alpha Bank. All of this stuff that Fusion GPS had been pushing out there, all of the quote unquote free press was turning it over. They were giddy. These people are so damn zealous. They never stopped at all to say, wait, hold up. Why is an entity that actually isn't even is a foreign lobbyist, because Fusion GPS, if you remember, was hired by Russian oligarchs to lobby against the Magnitsky Act. Now, the Magnitsky Act had to do with a guy who blew the whistle on a Russian embezzlement and they killed him. And so they wanted to punish these Russian oligarchs, and they were able to do so, and the Infusion GPS was hired to lobby against to have all of this, the word escapes me, to all of the penalties that had been meted out to have those removed, sanctioned. They had them sanctioned. And so they were trying to get the sanctions lifted. And so Fusion GPS was actually working on behalf of these Russian oligarchs, lobbying against the Magnitsky Act, but they weren't registered as foreign agents. The same thing that Paul Manafort got busted for. Fusion GPS never did. That's the entity that was working with the Clinton campaign. And that's one of the reasons why they were able to get all this Russian stuff. So anyway, back to this thing. These journalists never stopped to ask any of these questions. It was all about pushing the accusation. This reminds me, like I said, they were using the Democrat Party's LBJ pig blinker strategy. Now, if you're unfamiliar with that, back during the presidential campaign of 1972, Hunter S. Thompson, he had a serialized account. He traveled with the campaigns and was writing about the account, and it was published in Rolling Stone per issue called Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail 72. And he relayed a story from the Johnson campaign. And it said this, quote, This was one of the oldest and most effective tricks in politics. Every hack in the business has used it in times of trouble, and it's even been elevated to the level of political mythology in a story about one of Lyndon Johnson's early campaigns in Texas. The race was close. Johnson was getting worried. Finally, he told his campaign manager to start a massive rumor campaign about his opponent's lifelong habit of enjoying carnal knowledge of his barnyard sows. The campaign manager protested, "My gosh, we can't get away with calling him a pig blinker. No one's going to believe a thing like that." "I know," Johnson replied, "but let's make the SOB deny it," end quote. They just needed to make this accusation of outlandish impropriety and then just build it from there. That was the whole point. And so they created these two camps of people, particularly within the press, the people who hated Trump so much that it was nearly tangible in its ferocity, right? People who figured he could have done these things, so why not believe that he did? Their hatred of him could justify all sorts of things. I mean, when you tell someone, "Oh my gosh, this guy's Hitler, he's Hitler." Well, hell, who doesn't hate Hitler? I mean, except maybe for Hitler, but he's dead. But you know what I mean? You're going to believe that they're capable of all kinds of things. And you want to believe that they've also done evil things because you hate them. No one ever wants to feel, when you're talking about Trump here, no one ever wants to feel that they're the bad person or they're the one coming up short because they can't justify their hatred. So they hated the guy. They couldn't really justify it. So then they sort of got the cart and the horse in backwards order. Then they decided, well, this makes me just hate him more. See? Things that they would not have believed in the first place had they not hated him so damn much. So it's this vicious cycle. So that was the one camp. Why not believe that he did it? And then you have the people who knew he hadn't done these things of which he was accused. But why not play on the hatred of the dumb people who hate him anyway, because their hatred, which extended far beyond general policy dislike into some kind of irrational realm, that would predispose them to believe literally any accusation made. So they played them. You have the people who got played and then the people who played them. And there were definitely enough reporters to facilitate this for the DNC. And the DNC was fine for it. Don't forget, along with the Clinton campaign, because they weren't honest about how they were spending their cash. The press, their partisan zealotry suffocated any investigative instinct. It suffocated any kind of curiosity. That, to me, that's the death of the free press. Because it shouldn't matter what the politics of the person involved was. You had government entities that were leaking information and weaponizing different agencies to punish someone because of their politics. And there was no evidentiary basis at all whatsoever for them to do what they did. So they tried to launder discredited oppo in the press to substantiate, to justify getting these surveillance warrants on people in the Trump campaign. And the free press never once stopped and asked about, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Because for them, it became about personality and not the office. For them, it became about personality and not the structure of the republic. They lost sight of their original purpose. These people drove a dagger in the heart of a free press more than any tyrant could have ever done. They themselves discredited themselves with the American public. Trump didn't do it. Trump could have never hurt them this bad. No one could ever hurt someone as badly as someone can hurt themselves. And that's exactly what the press did here. The free press will never recover from this. It's dead. The idea of this watchdog for the people has been so thoroughly destroyed, it will never return. And it makes me infuriated because it is one of the most important institutions in a republic. People have to have a place to go where they can get information. But everybody's an activist today. Everybody's an activist. Everybody wants to be known for something. Everybody wants to have a byline. Everyone's a fame whore. You have a nation full of fame whores. A nation full of activists. A nation full of Z-list politicians who want to start podcasts. You have a nation full of people who are desperate to be contributors. You have a nation full of people who are desperate to be that one person that kicks off the story. They're so thirsty for it. It's the United States of me. And look what it's doing to the institution. People are forgetting their purpose. It should terrify the press. It should terrify people that you had these huge entities, these government agencies that were running away with zero accountability, freely weaponizing the tools at hand that they are supposed to use to protect the people that they're targeting, all in the name of attaining more power. The press should be saying, we are reporting on behalf of the people, on behalf of them. We're watching this institution. We see these pillars crumbling. Because a smart person would say, it doesn't matter who's in the elected office. A smart person would say, if we're allowing them to do this now, what are we allowing to potentially be done to ourselves in the future? A smart person would see and be a little selfish in how they view this and see, wow, if this is used against people I dislike, what's to stop it from being used against me when my ideology is out of power? They never once thought about this. In some ways, they don't care about self-preservation. They're willing to sacrifice any chance at future protections to do what? To be a stepping stone for these people? I just don't get it. These sycophants? I do not understand a press that are such sycophants that they're willing to not only sacrifice the sanctity and security of the republic, but they're willing to debase themselves in the process. I mean, look at these people. There's a list. The Federalist published a list. Chris Steele, you have Maggie Haberman at New York Times, Paul Krugman, New York Times, Michelle Goldberg, New York Times, Malcolm Nance, MSNBC, John McLaughlin, former CIA acting director. But you have all of these, Greg Gordon, McClatchy, Peter Stowe, McClatchy, Jason Leopold, BuzzFeed, Anthony Cormier, BuzzFeed, Luke Harding, Dan Collins, The Guardian, Gloria Borger, CNN, Manu Rajuk, CNN, Ken Delaney, and NBC. Chris Matthews, Oliver Darcy, CNN, Joe Scarborough, MSNBC, Chris Hayes, MSNBC, David Corn, MSNBC, Joy Reid, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, all of these people, Tom Nichols over at The Atlantic, all of these people, Jennifer Rubin, WAPO. I mean, oh my gosh. What do people have such low self-esteem and such an absence of self-respect that they're willing to debase themselves to be nothing more than a political whore? Because that's what it is. Let's be frank. Summer is almost here, and Good Ranchers wants to give you what you've been craving, a beautiful, tasty steak for the grill. Nothing says quality time with family and friends better than an all-American steak from Good Ranchers. I like how everything comes vacuum sealed and it all tastes great. Every cut is sourced from local American farms and is hand-cut, trimmed, and aged to perfection. Good Ranchers is proud to be your trusted source for high-quality all-American meat. Visit GoodRanchers.com and pick your box. They have ribeye, New York strip, all-natural burgers, and all the delicious chicken you could ever want. Plus, it's all $30 off with my code DANA. This is the perfect time of year to easily change the way you buy meat. Visit GoodRanchers.com and use my code DANA for $30 off of any box. And make this summer one to remember with American meat delivered right to your door from GoodRanchers.com. Nothing says quality time with family and friends better than an all-American steak from Good Ranchers. Use my code DANA for $30 off at GoodRanchers.com today.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
All you have right now is a circumstantial case.
Actually, no, Chuck. I can tell you that the case is more than that, and I can't go into the particulars, but there is more than circumstantial evidence now. So, again, I think...
So you have seen direct evidence of collusion?
I don't want to go into specifics, but I will say that there is evidence that is not circumstantial and is very much worthy of investigation. So
awesome. There has been a
Adam
report
Schiff,
from CNN that Wednesday night that there that the FBI was looking into collusion with the Russians and the Trump campaign in terms of
just
spreading information about Hillary Clinton's campaign. Do you have any information to back that up?
Come on, Adam.
I'm not sure that I can comment on that. I can say that I think that the investigation that the director talked about at our Monday hearing
is like a frillion 11 minutes long. Because there's so much audio and video of these cats going out there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I lied so often. I mean, you're just going to have to trust me about the evidence. You know, I have proving that there's total collusion. They lied to you. Now, we have a lot more on the way, too, because there's some movement in the Biden case. The IRS removed the entire investigation team from the Hunter Biden case.
What?
Uh-huh. The whistleblower says that it's retaliatory. We're going to talk about that. We also have the latest on Daniel Penny And we're also going to let you know about a sneaky way banks are in Texas right now trying to lobby against the bill to stop them from tracking gun purchases. Stay with us. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members, and they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Yeah, I vehemently disagree with Mr. Durham's characterizations of what we did in the report. And it's very simple. He betrays a deep misunderstanding of not only what we knew at the time, but how we make these decisions. I think it's incredibly important for people to understand what we were seeing then. And it was basically this, Anderson. We'd known for over a year that the Russians had been attacking us in cyberspace, specifically at political institutions and government institutions. We knew in the beginning of 2016 that they had turned those attacks on the Democratic National Committee, and they had stolen and exfiltrated a large amount of information from the DNC.
Yeah, but you remember, I got to go back to that. So that's Andy McCabe. They finally trotted him out on CNN. Remember the whole thing, the DNC claim? So they said that they thought that the Russians hacked their server before the 2016 election. And then Debbie Wasserman Schultz and other Democrat leaders said, no, you cannot investigate it. Remember they denied they wouldn't allow the forensic investigation? Just saying. So don't trot that out and use it as evidence here, Andy. Welcome back to the program. Second hour of the show. Dana Lash here with you, your lovable curmudgeon. And so this whole thing, this whole report, this is one of the wildest things. I mean, it's what we all expected anyway, but that's not the point. The point is that it's all out there now. And now Democrats, this is their thing. At first they were saying, but more collusion. Oh, there's all this collusion. Now their response is, well, it wasn't illegal that we know of. Now, I will say, and I included this in my write-up that's on Substack, there was, this was on page 98. Durham writes that the offenses that he has seen do not meet the standard or do not violate the criminal code. Now, my friend Andy McCarthy says the same thing, that just because it may not violate the criminal code does not mean that it's incredibly important. Now, frankly, this is an area of law where that's why I always defer to people like Andy McCarthy, because how it doesn't and why it doesn't is wild to me, because I think it should, and I want to know what can be done to change it. Because the message then is, oh, well, it's okay so long as you just go right up to the line of not violating criminal code. This is worse. The J6 thing, you had some people that broke away, or some people that I don't even think went to the thing at the Ellipsis and went over to the Capitol and decided to get froggy. It was not an insurrection or anything else any more than any other leftist protest inside a Capitol building is an insurrection. I'm so tired of that. I think people who say that are stupid, right or left. I think you're a moron if you say that. It is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. It deserves every name in the book to be thrown at it because it is that devoid of any kind of intellectual muscle. It was a riot. And it was a small number of people that rioted because there were a lot more there who didn't. But it was a riot. It wasn't an insurrection. It's the stupidest damn thing I've ever heard, the way it's characterized like that. It's moronic. And to say that that was the worst thing, what happened here is heinous. If this had been the Republican, I'm going to say it. If this had been the Republican Party that did this, the difference would be that you'd see a lot of other Republicans going after the party. That's the difference. because I'm not a party animal. I'm an ideological person, and I like the Republic. I want to protect the institution that is a Republic, and I'm ideological. And anything that doesn't go into those two things, then that's not something I'm part of. So that's the difference here. So it kind of makes you wonder what the motivations are for the people who don't treat this as such. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So their defense is, well, you know, it wasn't illegal. Oh, so you're now admitting that you did it. Just want to make sure that we know. Now they're admitting that they did it. This is what really, really gives a lot of strength to the independent press. There was no evidence to support this investigation. It was entirely politicized. And I will say Durham names in this. I mean, Andy McCabe and Peter Strzok, they used a zero standard for justifying an investigation. There was no at all whatsoever evidentiary standard to justify the investigation as they were doing it. Now, when you look at the foreign influence in the Hillary Clinton campaign, that is entirely a different question. And the fact that they lowered the standard to kick off this investigation into the Trump campaign while ignoring the very clear-cut foreign influence in the Clinton campaign, that's the underscoring of the politicization of this whole investigation. I mean, they were basing all of this on entirely uncorroborated intelligence. All of it. And they after one trail went cold and another, they dead end. They never at once thought, well, maybe there isn't anything here. They never at once thought let's figure out what else we can do. I don't know how the FBI continues after this. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. When you compare, and the Federalist has a very good piece on this, they compared everything that's in the Durham investigation, and they compared it to the accusations made in the press. Wow. I mean, it's true and false is what it is. Now, the press is saying, oh, well, there's nothing here. There's no blockbuster revelation. There's nothing illegal. They all keep saying that, from the New York Times to the Associated Press to USA Today. Like, they said that essentially the argument is mistakes were made, but who among us? That's essentially what they argue. All of these. The Federalist does a very good job at looking at these. This isn't the big thing with this, too, is that this isn't just the Clinton campaign. It's not just the DOJ. It's not just even Fusion GPS, but it's the White House. It's the CIA. It's all of these agencies, the entirety of the legacy press. It is every single one of these agencies, their stooges in the press, the people to whom they fed this information back channel, and they so zealously spread knowingly false information in a coordinated political hit to rob you of an election. That's what happened. I mean, this, and it was the, it, they had no evidence and they launched this. And this was all about poisoning the well. And even after, and this is the other thing that the report gets into, even after they realized that this garbage oppo from the Clinton campaign, that the Clinton campaign paid for, and then they were farming out to make these stories to justify surveillance, the FBI knew the entire time that it was all garbage. They went along with it. And I told you before, I told you last hour, let me go back to my piece on this because I want to pull up this specific page. This was page, forgive me because I'm going through all these pages here. This was page 101 and 102. Let me go to that. This is when all of the, this is Durham recounting. He actually has conversations, the lead up to the initial page FISA application, which begins on page 100. And it gets into, it's under Andy McCabe, who's on CNN right now. They said that Durham writes that, as has been noted, the including by McCabe, that FISA warrant on page would have never been authorized without the Steele reporting. Without the garbage discredited oppo for which Hillary Clinton paid, the Steele dossier, the FISA warrant would have never, ever, ever have been allowed. It never would have gone through. Now, this gets into the weeds with some stuff that supports this, but the 30,000 foot view is that they knew within 2 days, the Crossfire investigators, they had information from four of these different reports from Chris Steele, that this was being used as the probable cause, as the sole. There was nothing, literally nothing else there to trigger surveillance. It was 1,000% solely that. That's page 100. If you guys have the PDF, you literally can follow along with me. I mean, it was solely that. Now, this going into the agents that were having an exchange. So they were exchanging messages, FBI link messages, and they were talking about, it was a support operations specialist talking about this Crossfire hurricane investigation. Now, I wanted to share this with you because this is stunning. And this is page, this is page one, I believe this, or this is 101. This is page 101. So it gets into what the case agent on Crossfire Hurricane is talking to the support operations specialist. So somebody who's combing through the data, etc. The agent says they're talking about the how some of the stuff is suspicious to them. So the specialist says, hopefully Steele can get some more detailed information because he's not trusting what he's reading. The case agent says, yeah, exactly. Dates, times, that would be key. The specialist says, yeah, it just goes down to how confident we are in that reporting. Specialist, there aren't a whole lot of details in it. Agent, haha, true. Specialist, which is just what worries me a bit. Hopefully the sources, sub-sources, are legit. Now, key in on that. The specialist says, they seem legit based on past reporting. Agent, yeah, no kidding. What was strange was that the British intel didn't want to deal with the guy. Specialist says, but there aren't many specifics in this reporting that couldn't be expanded on from open source. The agent says, yeah, not sure why. The specialist replies, that's weird too. If he has the subsource network he claims to have and the reporting suggests, you'd think that they, meaning British intel, would be interested in him. Though these are newly developed since he went to Brit intel. Agent says, yeah, that's the weird thing. Another agent that they're not naming said it was the OC angle and that they're not too interested, but it still seems odd. Agent, quote, pay attention to this. Who knows? We may have to take a calculated risk with the reporting if we're pressed for time. And there you go. They knew they were suspicious of the information. It was uncorroborated. They knew there was no insight into the reliability of Steele's subsources. They knew that they needed to evaluate the credibility and reliability of human source information, but people like James Comey and others were breathing down their neck to give them something. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. Patriot.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I love Primal Scream. I just got to say that. Man, I love that. That's such an underappreciated track, right? Golly, for those who are listening terrestrially. Okay, so first up, I thought Kane would be interested in this, actually. Billionaire investor George Soros' fund dumped its entire Tesla stake in the first quarter, cashing out on the EV maker's 2023 rebound. Interesting. Do you find that interesting?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's a little interesting. There's room for speculation as to the reasons why, but...
No, there's not.
Yeah, sure, there's a little, no. Little bit.
No, he dumped... it's the entire stake. All of it. And they got some gains from the 68% surge in the January-March period. So I just wanted to put that on the table because there's some Musk. Man, they are gearing up. They've orchestrated a smear attack against this dude. So this, I don't even know how this happens. An Ocean County widow found her bank account overdrawn by $100 billion. So it's like she's got the same... I guess what problem that Congress has, right? Yeah. $100 billion. She had to reach out to News 12 New Jersey to figure out. Patricia Conlon says she woke up Friday morning. She immediately called Chase Bank and she said she was stunned. It took her hours. She was frantic. She was trying to figure out how this happened and she has no clue. They said, you know, she's like, keep your eye on your bank account. She's still dealing with us and her husband just passed away. So she's still trying to figure out what happened. So they said they're investigating. You got to keep your eye on stuff. That's what I tell, you know, my kids. I'm like, just because everything's digital, that means doubly you have to keep an eye on everything. In Montreal, for some reason, they don't want dogs to bark at a dog park. They put a no barking sign up at a dog park. But what about if you're a person? Because it's just a dog barking. What if you're a person who goes up there and barks? I would totally do that. If I found that sign, I'd be out in the park barking all the time. Just, I totally would. Oh my gosh. And we also have a family of a middle schooler who wore a two-gender shirt. They banned their shirt. They're now suing the school for free speech. Up next, Matt Schaefer.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
We are unique among advanced developed nations in tolerating on a routine basis gun violence in the form of shootings, mass shootings, suicides. You know, in Australia, you had one mass shooting 50 years ago and they said, oh, we're not doing that anymore. That is normally how you would expect a society to respond when your children
Well, a quick thing on that, by the way, because everyone messes this up. That was Barack Obama in video from just yesterday that Kane and Steve flagged. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. The reason that he's wrong about Australia is because while they did push a confiscation program initially, the private ownership of firearms in Australia is actually above what it was, the levels pre-confiscation. So it's incredibly important to remember that. And also violent crime actually did not decrease during that period as well. And I've written two books on it and I'm happy to provide everyone with receipts on it. I published it all over the internet. So like I said, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you, your lovable curmudgeon. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the show. You can watch the simulcast of the radio show, DirecTV, Channel 347, YouTube, Facebook as well. In this ongoing push, because we've seen it get more and more sophisticated and it gets into the weeds for a lot of people. And I have people that routinely reach out and say that, you know, they're worried, like whether it's digital currency or whether it's this or that, they're very, very worried about backdoor ways for either the government federally or state by state to create a backdoor registry, right? And that's one of the things that we've been consistently worried about. We've also talked about these social scores that we've seen in China and how ESG, et cetera, they've tried to implement this in every aspect of of America, our financial sector included. And one of those areas that it seems to be entirely concentrated on as of late is your banks and credit cards. And it's incredibly stunning. I was looking at a couple of these and in our Republic of Texas, okay, you'd think this would never happen in Texas, right? I mean, the motto is literally don't mess with Texas. I didn't know there was an asterisk that says, well, except. So there's a bill that's being pushed, HB 2837, prohibiting credit card companies and banks from tracking your individual firearm and ammo purchases. Now, banks want to exclude themselves from this. They don't want to be part of this. And who the one of the gentlemen signing sounding the alarm on this is Representative Matt Schaefer from the great Republic of Texas. And we appreciate him fighting on our behalf on this. And he's one of those behind HB 2837. This is and it's good to see you, Representative. Thank you so much for joining us.
This, glad to be here.
This is a lot of people don't understand how this works because they know they don't want their financial institutions to track what they're purchasing, because ultimately that's what we're talking about. I mean, it is a de facto backdoor registry so that they can track everything that you're purchasing. They know what you're purchasing. They know everything, you know, all the details of it. And so this bill, banks apparently are trying to exempt themselves from being barred from this. Tell us about this. And apparently they're lobbying very hard and putting a lot of heat on lawmakers in Austin.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. You laid it out pretty well. So last year or so, I've been watching what's been happening with the banks and the credit card institutions, and particularly with Senator Elizabeth Warren, who sits on the banking and on the finance committee in the United States Senate. She has been urging credit card companies to begin this data collection on gun and ammo purchases. And her and Amalgamated Bank, which is out of New York, we're pushing something called the International Organization of Standardization out of Switzerland. And this organization in Switzerland actually sets the merchant category codes for when you do your payment cards, mm-hmm. whether it's a debit or credit. So you go to a store, you buy something at an Academy or a Cabela's, it gets a piece of data gets attached to that purchase that identifies that purchase. Right now, that code is general in nature. It's going to either say sporting goods or like a miscellaneous code. There's no distinct identifier that would attach that transaction through their banks and the credit card companies to a firearm purchase or to an ammunition purchase. But she worked with Amalgamated Bank to press this organization to add these new codes. And in September of last year, they did it. And so I said, we got to stop this. So I drafted a bill. I pushed it through the House. And it would actually prohibit all banks and all financial institutions that are part of this, what is really kind of a complicated, complex transaction. You know, from the time you swipe your card at the merchant, it goes through an acquiring bank, goes through the payment processor, goes to your issuing bank. It's this very complicated financial process behind the scenes. And all those financial institutions will be either collecting or assigning this new firearms or ammunition category code to your purchase. And the people who are supporting this are explicit about the data collection they want. This is literally an attempt at a mass surveillance of law-abiding citizens buying guns and ammunition. And you can just let your imagination run wild as to what they will do with this. They will, as part of the ESG effort, they'll just say, you know what, you're a high-risk customer or you're a high-risk hardware store because you sell guns and ammunition. We're not going to do business with you, or we're going to charge you more money. We will make your fees higher than someone else's fees. They'll build a database. And you know what happens with databases? They get hacked. They get leaked. There'll be some 20-something-year-old who gets slipped some money. All the money will get leaked to political interests who want to shame people. And what will also happen is they'll have this database, and the federal government will come knocking on the door and say, hey, we'd like to see some data on these purchases. Oh, here it is. They'll just hand it over. Wow. So my bill will actually go after that and shut that down in the state of Texas. But the banks, particularly the large banks, the Wells Fargo's, the Chase's, the Bank of America's, they are working through their lobbyists in the Capitol to try to play on Republican sense of, you know, we don't ever want to overregulate, right? We don't. But they're trying to say there's no reason to regulate the banks here. But there absolutely is, and they're actually providing misinformation. So we were able to get the bill out of the committee in the Senate last night. The last step is for it to go to the full floor of the Senate for a vote. But tell your listeners, they are working overtime to put amendments on this bill, which would delay it and put in jeopardy of passing it, to carve the banks out because they know what the ultimate goal is. And that's mass surveillance.
Yes. We're talking with Texas Representative Matt Schaefer. And even if you're not in Texas, we got listeners across the country. I would actually maybe check into your state capitals and see what bills are coming through, because this is just Texas. I can only imagine what's happening in some of these other states where you have people who may not have eyes on it as you do. You brought up a very interesting point, a very interesting narrative that I actually saw just the other day being used in this, where, oh, well, Republicans are wanting to regulate the banks. This is actually to stop the banks from regulating the people.
That's right. We simply want them to maintain the status quo, keep their ordinary course of business, which is to not collect this very detailed data about firearms and ammunition. If my bill passes and they follow the law, they don't have to do anything.
And I think, too, the worry about leaking information is incredibly, that's a very legitimate concern. And for those who think that that would never happen, I mean, how did tax information about people get leaked? I mean, we've had Social Security numbers of veterans leaked. I mean, this is information that's supposed to be, you know, sacred and protected. Not so much. We've seen that in recent times. This stuff is getting leaked more and more.
And it's interesting you mentioned the taxes, because in this transaction, from the time you swipe the card till it's finally settled with your bank, the business has a bank called the acquiring bank who assigns the merchant category code. They are actually required by the IRS to report all these purchases by merchant category code. So if they start using this new firearms and ammunition code, the information will actually be going to the IRS.
Wow. Just wanted to, hey, Kane, how did Waco start? Sorry. Just wanted to bring
really
that up.
It's really insidious. You know, every time, you know, we ran past constitutional carry last session, and our Second Amendment activists feel, you know, like they can kind of take a deep breath and relax a little bit.
No, it gets worse.
There's no relaxation, because, Dana, they've not been able to get what they want at the Supreme Court. They've not been able to get what they want through our legislature. They can't get a bill through Congress. And so they're going through the major corporations. They're going through the banking system to get what they want.
Yep. And this is not unheard of. Last question for you. Obviously, voters in Texas need to be calling their lawmakers. Feel free to name names if there's anybody that we need to, you know, just make a friendly, just reach out and friendly touch somebody, you know, reach out and just give them, you know, how are you doing? Just check, just temperature check. Anybody?
Just encourage your Republican senators to keep the bill clean. No amendments to House Bill HB 2837. No amendments to HB 2837. That's the quickest way to the governor.
There we go. And that's what we'll do. We appreciate you, Representative Matt Schaefer. Thank you so much for bringing this to everybody's attention and watching this so diligently. It's so incredibly important. We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Dana, thank you.
Of course. And we'll make sure that we have all that information out to y'all as well. And I'll put some links out. But yeah, just a friendly little reach out and touch someone, you know, because we're friendly. I mean, we are nothing if not friendly. Am I right, Kane?
That's right.
Oh, can I get an amen? We are nothing if not friendly. We are loving people, making friends wherever we go. But this is incredibly important. And these codes, check y'all's own states. Check the states in which you live in and see what bills are coming up like this, because the banks are pushing hard for this. And I saw that, you know, when he mentioned that, you know, how the narrative is that, well, these Republicans just want to regulate banks. There are some Republicans who get a little scared about this. Maybe they are not as good at finessing the messaging as they ought to be. But this isn't even about finessing the messaging. That's just a lie. This isn't about regulating the banks. It's to stop the banks from regulating you, the people. We have a lot more on the way. We got Florida Man coming up. And later on in the program, for the first time in this studio, we have a guest. It's a friend of mine. He taught me some pistol defense courses, handgun defense. And he also just, I don't know, maybe you heard of him. He's got this like super successful series on Amazon. It's called like The Terminalist. Stars Chris Pratt. You know, he's got a frillion 11,000 books. He churns them out. He's going to be joining us, Jack Carr, with his latest book. And we're going to ask him about some other stuff, too, because some of the stuff in his books, I'm just saying, the storylines seem very eerily familiar.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Man, I read this whole story, and the only part that I cared about was over at Tampa Bay Times was this woman. Florida woman won $144,000 jackpot in an illegal casino, And when the casino wouldn't pay, she called the police. Katira, illegal casino. Oh, okay. Keyword being illegal. It's the casino is called the Come Up. Looks totes legit. Shiny dollar signs, all that. Katira Walters Powell visited her. She was visiting a restaurant. She saw the casino. She went over there and didn't have, I guess, I don't know. Like, there's a bunch of stuff with illegal casinos. She printed a ticket after she struck a jackpot, $144,000. And she's like, she said she printed a ticket like she did at Hard Rock. But she says the security guard snatched it, called it void. She said the guard said she couldn't print her own ticket. Another employee hung an out of order sign on the machine. The guard called the owner on speaker. The owner said they're not paying for that. Walters Powell said, I paid my money. How are you not? How can you not pay out? You know, this is illegal. Well, yeah, it's a legal casino. So she called the police and the police are like, it's an illegal casino. Like what? It's like that. Because I keep seeing this referenced over and over and over again. It's this viral meme. It says, I never thought leopards would eat my face. Sobs the woman who voted for the leopards eating people's faces party. The same. What did you think was going to happen? It's literally an illegal casino, right? Like, what? How did you think this is going to go? Oh my gosh. This is WFLA. Kane found this one. This is the lunch meat guy, the lunch meat bandit. Man arrested after throwing lunch meat at a Florida officer. Now, I mean, has he not seen the price of stuff lately? I mean, hi. I have like kids, it's summer, so I was, you know, like I get ham for ham sandwiches. Have you seen the cost of ham? I'm just saying. A man was arrested last week after he threw lunch meat at a police officer. They said they were called to a smoke shop as Port Orange on Tuesday of last week after a worker reported a man disrupting the businesses and threatening workers. Some of it's on video. And he was being questioned. He said the smoke shop said he was bothering customers. The officer says, you've trespassed, you got to leave. And then he started getting violent. He said, come on, blank. You think I don't know what he said. I can only imagine. They just have it. They have it redacted. He yells, come on. You think I can't do it? I've got a black belt in karate and a black belt in judo. You're going to be in a world of hurt. And then he threw lunch meat at him. He threw it right at his chest, a piece of lunch meat. So he was arrested, taken to Volusia County Jail. I don't know what the charges for that. But I mean, he's an older dude and he's wearing a black T-shirt with, I think, a cat on it that says die. Yeah. So it didn't go so well for him. I mean, to just, you know. And also, I got one more. I got time. This is a deli meat person. We also have the Florida homeless man stole a police cruiser with a canine inside.
Oh, no.
I know. He crashed it into several cars.
Oh.
The canine better be okay, or I'm going to go to Florida and I'm going to swing this dude around by his ears. The officers were on the scene. 21-year-old Menelik Jarrett, Winter Haven. And so, he's being held with no bail, charged with burglary of a business, grand theft of a motor vehicle, a bunch of charges.
Dang.
The canine Logan was found safe.
Good.
There was another person who was injured. They were okay. They just have some head pain. But the canine was found safe. That's what matters here.
Right.
Third hour on the way. Go nowhere. We've got a lot more in store.
The problem, what we'll see, is that Donald Trump will use this as a means to undermine all of law enforcement, use it as a means to undermine our institutions that are so important in our justice system.
Wow. I don't know what I think about that one. That's I feel like that was the dumbest statement I probably could have heard. If no one. Asha Hutchinson, that audio soundbite. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour with you, Dana Loesch, here. He says that Trump's going to use that report to undermine the law enforcement justice system. I think the law enforcement justice system undermined their own thing. I just feel like that's... Where's the criticism of that? That's what we need. Where's the recognition and criticism of what the system did? This is what, you know what I mean? This is so aggravating. I get that he wants to try to draw distinctions between himself and Trump. And I mean, unlike Nikki Haley, I don't think Hutchinson's running as a stalking horse, but that is a dumb take. I mean, there's a way to, there's a way to not, if you don't want to blow smoke for your opponent, This is his. That was just a dumb soundbite. Devin Nunes, audio soundbite 13. Listen to what he had to say about this, because he's the guy who's been blowing the whistle on this from the get-go. Check it.
Remember, we had to sit through year after year after year of this nonsense of Trump and Republicans having something to do with Russia. Chris, even to this day, you have lunatics that say that every single day. So the Department of Justice, the FBI, congratulations, you scumbags. You have successfully poisoned the minds of millions of Americans.
Yeah.
While at the same time, you're going to have half of America, including myself, who doesn't trust anything the Department of Justice or the FBI have to say.
Hmm. Yeah, Devin Nunes. And he's right. We've had him on the show a million times before. And he's absolutely right with that. Because they did. This was about it. I mean, it did. It poisoned the mind of so many people. Now, how are you going to trust the FBI after something like this? How do you trust them after something like this? It's impossible to do so. So this, you know, the whole thing with this, the whole, you know, the defense that I hear from the left, and that, well, it wasn't illegal. Well, that we know of. I mean, perhaps, possibly, it might not be. I know that Andy McCarthy was saying that, you know, at first glance, he was wondering whether or not this was going to be something that actually violates the, you know, the criminal code. But we'll see. Golly, though, how do you ever recover trust in an institution like the FBI? And these are the people who did this. You know, I wrote about this, just like I said, yesterday. In chapter and verse. Now, I wanted to get to this other thing that it's incredibly important. The issue, here it is. New York Post has this story. The IRS removed the investigative team from the Hunter Biden probe in a move that the whistleblower calls, quote, clearly retaliatory. This is very troubling. We found this out Monday. Not just like a couple of people from the team, but the entire investigative team. Remember, they began this investigation back in 2018, and they were looking into Hunter Biden's finances, because you had 170 different suspicious activity reports generated from all this, everything that Hunter Biden was doing at this point. The Rosemont Seneca firm that he had established and he set up, they were in business with CEFC, which was the Chinese Beijing-backed energy company. So you had CEFC working with Rosemont Seneca. And don't forget, that was the relationship that also helped facilitate China's acquisition of one of the largest cobalt mines in the world, the People's Democratic Republic of Congo, which, sidebar, that was the same mine that ABC did the piece on when they found 20,000 children hand mining cobalt there. So, you know, green. But they were not claiming, they were not disclosing all of the millions of dollars they were making off of this. They weren't disclosing any of the money, which you think is kind of important when your dad's assuming the White House, right? Think you kind of got to disclose some of this stuff, especially when 10% was going to the big guy. So clearly that created a NatSec concern, right? And so the reason that the FBI got involved was because of these suspicious activity reports. And as I said previously, over 170 were generated. Now, there was a report that was generated because, as it came out last week, the Bidens had created the shell game of all these different companies, including LLCs, you know, all various different kinds, where they and their nine family members, they were getting money in, millions from China. They got a million in from Romania. They got stuff coming in from Ukraine on Hunter's part. They were getting all this cash in, and they were distributing it to all, basically laundering it. They're all these different companies, shoving it into all these different companies. And so that is what, all those moves, that is what triggered the suspicious activity reports. So that is what first triggered the investigation back into 2018. So now, current time with this headline, not just one, not just two, but the entire investigative team apparently has been removed by the IRS. And it was done on the orders of the Justice Department. The attorneys for the whistleblowers informed congressional leaders of this move in a letter. They write, quote, today, and this was yesterday, today the IRS criminal their criminal special agent, the outfit that they had that was, I guess, shepherding all of this, was informed that he and his entire investigative team are being removed from the ongoing and sensitive investigation of the high-profile controversial subject about which our client sought to make whistleblower disclosures to Congress. They write he was informed of the that the change was at the request of the DOJ. That's what the lawyers wrote. Now, the whistleblower had supervised the Biden probe since early 2020. He has not publicly identified Biden, according to the New York Post, as the subject of the case that he says is being brushed under the rug, but all these sources in Congress are confirming it. They have the IRS commissioner, Daniel Werfel, back on April 27th of this year. He was before House Committee Ways and Means, and he was saying, quote, I can say without any hesitation that there will be no retaliation for anyone making an allegation or a call to a whistleblower hotline. However, the lawyers note in this letter to Congress that this move is retaliatory, and that it is essentially obstructing Congress's inquiry into the matter. What other explanation would they have for removing literally the entire investigative team? And they noted that he's protected by 5 USC subsection 2302 from such moves because he followed the proper whistleblower protocol. Now, remember, Alexander Vindman did not do that. All the people who went to the press, that's not the protocol. This person, with their identity still protected, followed the protocol, thus their identity is still protected. And they went to raise the alarm with members of Congress. So what possibly could have been the reason why the entire investigative team was removed? And how was this going to affect the investigation? Because remember, this comes just, what, a week and a half after Comer and House Oversight had their press conference wherein they announced that they have all of this information and there's more to come, but that there is enough there to absolutely justify the investigation. And I want to draw a serious distinction. I want you to look at the way that this situation has been handled with Hunter Biden and the way that they handled the Trump collusion. They've had press conferences. They've published on House Oversight's website every bit of data. They have been entirely transparent with everything. We've seen the letters. They come out with the information as soon as they get it and they verify it. That's the other thing. They verify it. That's significant. They have been entirely transparent about this entire operation, about this entire investigation. You contrast that to Crossfire Hurricane. It was done behind closed doors. It was done secretively. It was done back channel. You saw nothing. You were told of nothing. There's no comparison. One is entirely political. And regardless of whatever political affiliation the Bidens have, it comes down to, were they selling influence? And from there, is it to the point where it endangers the national security of the United States? That is the big thing. So the entire team, I'm very interested to see how House Oversight responds to this. Super interested, because that is incredibly troubling. How is it going to affect, how does it affect the campaign? How does it affect the campaign? How in the world does removing the entire team mean that, how does it work? So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Now, I told you earlier that they are, I feel like they're trying to really smear Elon Musk with this orchestration here. Did you guys see this story? This was first came out of CNBC. The U.S. Virgin Islands issued a subpoena to Elon Musk, seeking documents and information related to the Epstein thing, who was totally did not commit suicide. But the subpoena, it doesn't, now they're not accusing Musk of being involved with any of this. They're saying that that Epstein may have tried to refer Musk to be a client of J.P. Morgan. And then J.P. Morgan is involved in a separate suit because they've been involved with all of the Epstein trafficking activities, etc., all of this other stuff. So Yeah, they wanted to, the way that they presented it, as Kane noted, they really wanted to intimate that Elon Musk is somehow being accused or that he's a part of this in some manner. But, I mean, apparently the only time that he was ever, his name was even ever involved in this was when apparently Epstein referred him to be a potential client to J.P. Morgan. And that was kind of it. So the Virgin Islands has, they've issued the subpoena from CNBC seeking documents for their lawsuit against J.P. Morgan over the trafficking by Epstein, according to the court filing that came out yesterday. They said that the Virgin Islands has tried unsuccessfully to serve him with Musk with a subpoena. It was issued April 28th. Over suspicion that Epstein may have referred or attempted to refer Musk as a client to J.P. Morgan. And that could have happened even without his knowing it. Exactly. That's what's so stupid. Like, he may not have even known. It would be like me having recommended Kane for something, and Kane has no idea that I did this. Right. Or maybe you guys know, I mean, everybody's been in this, I think, have known of a situation like this. Someone refers someone to you, or says, I can refer you to someone, and you don't know that they're having these conversations with these individuals. Musk says the allegations are idiotic. I don't know that he, I mean, he literally retweeted it and said, he goes, this is idiotic on so many levels. He goes, quote, he this is his tweet from May 15th. He says, this, that cretin never advised me on anything whatsoever. The notion that I would need or listen to financial advice from a dumb crook is absurd. And he says, JP Morgan, he says, let Tesla down 10 years ago, despite Tesla having despite Tesla's global commercial banking business, which we then withdrew. He says, I've never forgiven them. It is stupid. It is. They're trying to smear him. It's over Twitter. They're so mad. They're trying to smear him because of that, because they know that even being remotely associated with Epstein is bad. That it's even being remotely associated. That's the thing. It goes back to what I tell you in the first hour. The LBJ pig blinking strategy. Exactly right. I mean, this is going to keep coming back. They just want the accusation of impropriety. They let the theater of the mind take care of the rest. We have a lot more on the way. We have headlines coming up that you don't want to miss. And then later on, our friend Jack Carr is in studio. He's got a new book out. We're going to talk with him about Only the Dead, his sixth thriller of the series. We've got that. And of course, what's next after The Terminal List on Amazon? We got another season coming.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So this is a crazy story. It's getting worse and worse. Marijuana laced with fentanyl rising across the U.S. as doctors warn the drug cocktail is found in New York, Alabama, Illinois, and Louisiana. And they said that experts, doctors say that they think kids are just smoking pot, but then tests show that it's all laced with fentanyl. More things coming across the border, and it's only going to get worse now after the expiration of Title 42. Also, this is a very interesting story. I found this on Junk Science. It gets into the EPA proposal from the Biden administration to shut down U.S. coal plants. A, it's illegal, violating the West Virginia v. EPA as not authorized by Congress. But secondly, how do you can't have coal plants reduce emissions by 90%. And when 86% of our energy, our electricity comes from coal plants. It comes from coal plants. And let me see if I can get this in. New York Post, businessman allegedly killed his model girlfriend and used Google Translate for help of disposing the body. Not a headline that I had on my bingo list today at all whatsoever. We have more in store. Jack Carr, second guest ever in studio next. You don't want to miss. I know y'all are going crazy on social already. Stick with us.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
It's the new trailer that hit last Saturday for our friend Jack Carr and his new book, Only the Dead. And I have it in my hand. This is I think this is bigger than his other ones. You can tell he got really excited at this point in the story. I'm very excited to have Jack Carr in studio with us, our second studio guest, and the studio audience goes wild.
Hey! Yeah! We actually have people in
the
studio
for
the studio audience. So Jack Carr joins us in studio. Welcome back to Texas.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Congrats on the book.
Thank you so much. Love being in the studio. Such an honor to be here. This is really cool. Really cool to come behind the scenes. And I always love to see you guys. So thank you so much.
Well, it's like I said, always good to have you. And this is am I crazy in thinking that this is longer than your other ones?
It's the longest so far. So I didn't start out with that in mind, but for me, it's all about the story. So it doesn't matter how long it is. And usually these books are a little over 100,000 words, and I blew right past that, right by 110, 120, 130. So this is about 139,000 words. And for me, I don't get to 100 and say, well, it's about time to start wrapping this up, because that's where these things should be, and I'm coming up on a deadline. For me, it's all about that story. And this one took 139,000 words to get it where it needed to be. And it's also the most brutal to date. So
really?
There's that. Yeah, and that's saying something if people have read my other ones. But for sure, the most brutal and the thickest, so you can use it as a blunt impact weapon or a doorstop if you need to.
Well, it's great. And if people are unfamiliar, which I don't know how you would be, with our good friend Jack Carr, Navy sniper, New York Times bestselling author, and I know you've watched his series, The Terminalist, on Amazon Prime, starring Chris Pratt, which was so good.
Thank you.
And I know you were very excited. You were very well-behaved and tight-lipped about it, as you should be, because you can only say certain things when you can say them. But I know there's going to be a second season that was already announced.
Second season announced, and a spinoff announced as well. So a spinoff with the character Ben Edwards, played by Taylor Kitsch, who was a Texas Forever out here for number 33 on Friday Night Lights. And Taylor is just amazing. It's one of the characters that I think was more fully developed on the page for the script than in my first novel. And then Taylor just brought it to a whole nother level. And when we saw him and Chris Pratt do their screen test together, it was like, this person is Ben Edwards 100%.
Yes, yes.
He crushed it. And so we thought, well, at the end, it might be spoiler alert, so earmuffs for anyone who hasn't read the book or watched the show, but he has an ending. He wouldn't continue on, let's say that. So we went back and did it's a prequel origin story. So more of an international espionage story that shows how he goes from the SEAL teams to the CIA. Ooh. And instead of revenge thriller, conspiracy thriller, action thriller like The Terminalist, it's one goes international, and I am fired up. It is really good. It's on pause right now because of the writer's strike. Right. So we're about, and writing wise, we're about episode 5.
I was
5.
Getting ready to ask you about that.
Yeah. So it's that'll push things to the right a little bit probably. But once we dive back into it, then we'll start filming whenever we can and knock this thing out of the park, and then roll that one right into True Believer, which is my second novel starring Chris Pratt. And Chris will be in a few of the episodes of the spinoff as well.
The casting for this, and we're talking with our friend Jack Carr, who's in studio with us, and you can also check out his Danger Close podcast in addition to all of his best-selling books. I know you were involved in some of the casting, or at least you could influence some of it, because when you mentioned Taylor Kitsch, when I first heard that he was going to be cast in this, I thought, this is going to be interesting, because that is such... Ben is such a, I don't want to say convoluted, but he's a difficult character. Mm-hmm. He's a very it doesn't seem that way initially, but he's a very difficult character. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to get to like someone, and then I don't want to give anything, but you're not going to like him. I'll put it like that.
Right.
He does it very well, though. He's very amiable.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And people already like him as a person, and so he brings that with him to this role anyway. Same with Chris. You want to like this person. He might do some things.
He was in the Mario movie, if you're crying out loud. You can't hit a guy who was in the Mario movie.
Exactly. That's not possible. So he brings this to the role anyway for an audience that might need to forgive him for doing a couple of things, because it is violent, it is visceral, it is primal, it is rooted in the realities of modern combat, and it's a revenge thriller with someone who has nothing left to lose. So same thing with Taylor. Even though people know how he ends up in The Terminalist, going back, Taylor just being who he is and what he brings to the role, and the story now itself, now that we've written it out, he can pull it off. People will be on board, even though they know in the back of their head where it's going to end up down the line. I think that they'll be 100% on board, really, because it's Taylor and because these scripts are so good.
I'm very excited about it. And you keep every time you come out with a book, you're already writing your next thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that you have the spinoff. You also have Targeted, a series that's coming. Tell me about this
as
well.
That's right. So I always wanted to do nonfiction, but not the here's why time in the SEAL teams.
Exactly.
There's plenty of that out there, and people did so much more than I could ever have hoped to have done in the military.
Nobody actually knows the extent of what you've done, I have to say. You are very mysterious, which is, I mean, I know that I understand how it works, but there's you know, everyone is always so humble, you included.
Yeah. I had a good run, and...
I had a good run, so
it was timing. Right. A lot of that's timing, but I get to take those emotions and feelings and apply them to a totally fictional narrative. So for me, I'm kind of writing about the things that I did, but not actually what I did, but the feelings and emotions behind what it was like to be in an ambush in Baghdad in 2006, yeah. or what it was like to be a sniper in Ramadi at the height of the war. But I bring those to completely fictional narratives to bring those feelings.
You do a very
good
job with that.
Thank you.
Because it's things that most people, unless they've been in that position, they can't even remotely imagine.
And so I don't have to go out there and like interview somebody who was a sniper and then have their answers get filtered through other interviews that I've done, other research that I've done, documentaries, movies, books I've read. It all comes from my heart and soul right onto that page. So if the feelings and emotions feel real to the reader, that's because they are. And my plan was always to write nonfiction eventually, and I always wanted to go in and study these different terrorist events that were very impactful to me mm-hmm. as a kid. So it just made sense to start with the 1983 Beirut Barracks bombing, because I remember that cover of Newsweek and the cover of Time magazine
and
our local paper.
And
I write on Instagram and I put those out there in history posts, because I want to keep those alive so that we don't make those same mistakes going forward. So in that particular instance, there's a lead up to that event. So April 83, there's the United States Embassy is bombed in Beirut, Lebanon. And then there's some newly declassified documents from the Reagan administration that talk about who was wanted to put Marines ashore in Beirut, who wanted to keep them on amphib ships in the Mediterranean, and how that decision was made. And that leads into the October bombing, which has the largest number of Marines killed in a single day since World War II, since Iwo Jima. And then there's an ending to it as well. The person who planned that attack is killed in 2008 in Damascus, Syria. And he's killed in what was probably a joint Mossad-CIA operation, though neither intelligence agency has ever claimed responsibility. Mm. But he's in Damascus, Syria, 2008, gets behind the wheel of his car, and his headrest explodes. I probably shouldn't do if people don't know this, I should probably wait till the
tell us more.
So there's an investigative journalism side to it as well. Yeah. So, and I'm writing that with a historian and Pulitzer Prize finalist James Scott, who writes primarily about World War II. An amazing guy. So that's coming out in about a year and a half.
So much of, we're talking with our friend Jack Carr, so much of what you do is ripped from the headlines, and it's very familiar, and I think it makes it very current, but it also makes me wonder, because he puts out the best boxes. I have this huge box here behind me. I feel like it should have included a tinfoil hat, though, because some of the stuff, you read it and you think, okay, yeah, I know what was happening when this was written. I know what was going on when this was written. And you, I know a lot of people ask you for your thoughts and your positions mm-hmm. on all these different issues. You kind of, I mean, if they read your books, you kind of put it in there.
I do. And I always thought it was interesting.
That's very subtly.
Not very subtly, because I thought if you're getting in the mind of a character and you're seeing this situation through, in this case, his eyes, I want to know the other things that he's thinking about. Right. So if my character is, let's say, on the road in Northern Virginia and takes an exit and goes into Washington, D.C. for a couple minutes before he can circle back around, he's going to think about being a felon for a couple minutes mm-hmm. because he's got this pistol on him or whatever it might be. Other authors might not think of that, or other maybe publishers don't necessarily want the protagonist to alienate anybody or any segment of the audience. But for me, that's not a concern at all, because it's all about this story. And it's very natural for someone in this position, James Reese, mm-hmm. my protagonist, to think about those things. Mm-hmm. And it would be unnatural for someone with his background not to think about those types of things. So for me, it comes very naturally to put his worldview and his evolution as a person, as an operator, as a leader, as a citizen, seeing things changing in his own country. And mm-hmm. he asks those questions: is it worth still fighting for this country? What if I need this country in order to do something like I need to do in these novels, which is either get revenge or whatever it might be? Will you have to rely on this entity that might not have the citizen's right. best interests at heart? So I explore all of those in these pages of these novels.
I mean, wokery does not even escape you. The wokery in the military does not escape you. I mean, you even touch on AI. I read an interview that you gave recently where you were talking about AI, and I had the quote that you had. I thought it was very, you said, as a society, we've shown a propensity towards using new tools for what most would term evil, the manipulation of thoughts and behaviors to reach a desired end for a particular group or entity. I mean, it is a tool, but I do worry about the degradation of morality and how that's affected every aspect of everything in America, and how do you deal with implementing AI or relying on tech like that, considering that?
And now it's not even a question of could we or should we.
Exactly.
It's here.
Exactly.
And it's accelerating and moving into our lives faster than we ever ever conceived of in years prior. And the first, this writer strike that we just talked about, a lot of that is about AI. Mm-hmm. At first, it was going to be about streaming and the changes that have happened over the last decade when it comes to series television and streaming services. And now, with the advent of AI becoming such a big part of our lives, now a lot of these talks are about this AI and how is that going to affect writers in Hollywood. And I think this is going to be the first time that we're going to see a union get together to deal with this issue. And I think we're going to see it in a lot of other industries going forward as well, everything from truck drivers to every segment of society, because AI can take a lot of these jobs. And in this book, there's a thing mm-hmm. that we talk about that is, I had Brian Mora on the podcast, who wrote a book called The yeah. Able Archers, about a situation in 1983 where we almost had
that was a very exchange. I listened to that. It was a very good interview.
Thank you. And it's so if that person who was on watch in the Soviet Union in 1983 had been AI, because protocols in place
right.
and top-down pressure dictated that this person should have launched against the United States because there was a launch from the United States against the Soviet Union, but it wasn't real. But their computers were showing that it was real. And this one person happened to be on watch because the person who was supposed to be there was sick. So this one person was in there who had studied the United States, studied the Soviet Union, and thought, you know what, this is not real. This can't be real. He didn't launch. He's probably the one person in the Soviet Union that could have been in that seat that wouldn't have done it. And he had a bad ending later on, but because of that event, because he didn't follow orders essentially. But imagine if that was AI. That was the point. Imagine if that was AI that sees this launch, it's a glitch, and what would they do? They're not going to be that human element there to
exactly.
say, wait a second, and now we have a nuclear winner.
Exactly. That's such a great point. Talking to our friend Jack Carr, you know, I have to ask you this as well, because you know, you touch on in your series the, I don't want to give anything away, betrayals, things that are certain government entities are doing that they shouldn't be doing, that we end up finding things out about. And like, it does make you very, because you see this in headlines today, and then you read about this very personalized account with mm-hmm. your protagonist, James Reese.
Yeah.
I look back at, I gotta ask you this question about this, because I see, I don't know if you want to call it a PSYOP or whatever it is. I see this group, Kane and I were talking about this the other day, the Patriot Front. Joe Biden went out and gave a speech at a historically black university. And, I mean, it was very interestingly timed. It seems like that group only comes out when he's giving a speech or making remarks. And I've never seen people arrested before, you know, at a protest, and they were allowed to keep their disguises on, their neck gaiters and their hats and their sunglasses. And they were all arrested, and they were all very similarly proportioned and wearing the same outfits. And, you know, we joke about it. But then, you know, you go to an escape and you're reading your book and you're like, you know what? This is true. It can totally happen. I'm just like curious as to your thoughts on all that.
Yeah, well, specifically, if we go back to the pages of history. I like to go back to the pages of history because usually there are clues there. And for one reason or another, we neglect to go back in those pages and take mm-hmm. those lessons and apply them going forward as wisdom. So if we did, we would find that this is a technique that has been used over and over again in order to instigate, to get to a desired end state. So for me, it's always about asking, who's manipulating me and why? And I think that's the case here. But we can also, when we talk about these institutions in our federal government that stray from their mandates, we can go back to the Church hearings and the Pike hearings of the mm-hmm. 70s. And after that, there was a reorganization of the CIA. But to think that they wouldn't go back to some of the things that they typically were doing in the 50s and 60s and the early 70s and not do those same sorts of things today just because we were reorganized, when this government has gotten so much more powerful over the last, over the preceding 20, mm-hmm. 30, 40 years, well, maybe we should spend a little more time in the pages of these history books, take those lessons and apply them to current situations. And because really, we're not making these decisions for us. It's for our kids, for our kids and our grandkids going forward. And the answers are out there.
That's
in
true.
The pages of history.
They are. Our friend Jack Carr, and you can always tell, you can kind of get the only tell that he has about how he feels about something is his voice will drop ever so slightly, just a bit. Otherwise, you can't tell. You have no idea. You can't know. The book, Only the Dead, by our good friend Jack Carr. Congratulations on all of your successes. I cannot wait to watch the latest series of Terminalist. Can't wait to watch Targeted. I can't wait to watch the spinoff, All About Ben, with starring Taylor Kitsch. I can't wait. I'm so excited, and I'm so happy to see someone who's so reasoned and well-written and well-spoken doing so good. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for joining me in studio.
Thank you for having me. This is amazing, and thank you for all you have done and continue to do for freedom.
Of course. Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
I still think it's far apart. It doesn't seem to me yet that they want it. It just seems that they want to look like they're in a meeting, but they're not.
Sorry.
They're not talking anything serious. And in the meantime, we just watched the CBO come out and say we're $100 billion further in debt. And so, seems more like they want a default than a deal for me.
That is Kevin McCarthy, and he's saying that it does not seem like Democrats want a deal. I hope you saw the, I think it was a Politico piece. I'm going to put that in your Substack chapter and verse radio prep email that goes out tomorrow. They're trying to develop this narrative that, oh, these Democrats are working to try to save McCarthy as a way to sow division on the right against McCarthy. So that brings us, Kane, to Today in Stupidity.
Oh, it's Karine Jean-Pierre. Oh, my gosh. She hit the podium just a little bit ago. So she says this is a president that's been around the block a few times. He knows how to negotiate. Listen to this.
He has been around the block a few times, right? When you think about negotiations, he knows how to make deals. He knows how this works. There's no one more experienced.
Oh, see, that's the thing. He was this wheeler dealer negotiator.
He's
the greatest negotiator since LBJ. And then where is he? He calls a lid at like 2 o'clock every single day and heads back to Delaware. Folks, that does it for us tonight. Make sure you sign up for Chapter and Verse over at Substack. Find us on YouTube, Facebook, like, and subscribe. I'll be back with you tomorrow.